Do you ever wish that you could go to heaven? I don't mean the morbid question, do you wish you could die because life sounds better on the other side of the fence? I mean, do you ever wish that in the here and now you could go to heaven? People go on holiday, people go to theme parks, people do all kinds of things. Do you ever wish that you could go to heaven? Perhaps for an hour, perhaps for two. The world is full of chaos, isn't it? All kinds of things, mixed up, tangled up, and stressful. Wouldn't it be nice to go somewhere where everything is perfectly ordered and spend an hour or two there? The world is spoiled, isn't it, by human sin. Those of you like me who have been to the Alps will know that on the continent they have no qualms whatsoever about sticking pylons in the middle of an otherwise beautiful spot. Wonderful view, and yet just where you would take a photograph, they've shoved a pylon. And human sin does that to God's world, doesn't it? It's otherwise lovely, and yet we go and do things that spoil it. Wouldn't it be nice to go somewhere where God rules, where it's obvious and visible that God is in charge, and there isn't any human sin to spoil it? Just for an hour or two. All manner of things in the world are slightly ugly. It's like those pylons. It's like all kinds of things where you're wandering through life, through things that would otherwise be beautiful, but somehow something has spoilt it. A wonderful field full of wild flowers, and yet someone's tramped straight through the middle of it and squashed lots of them. Ugliness where there should be beauty. Wouldn't it be nice to go somewhere just for an hour or two where everything is truly beautiful and there's no ugliness about it? Wouldn't it be nice to go somewhere where you could experience the glory and majesty and splendor of the living God, even if it's just for an hour or two? Do you ever wish you could go to heaven? We come to the next seven chapters of the book of Exodus this morning. We've been going through it quite large chunks at a time, and this morning we come to chapters 25 to 31. And in Exodus chapters 25 to 31, we discover that it is possible to go to heaven. And the reason why it's possible for us to go to heaven is because heaven has come to us. Heaven has come to earth. In the past, God put his heaven on earth. In the present, God is putting heaven on earth for us to go to. And in the future, heaven will come to the earth. And because God has sent heaven to earth, we can go to heaven. Let's remind ourselves, though, of the background of these chapters of Exodus. The background is that the people of Israel have been delivered from Egyptian slavery. Then God provided for their needs and looked after them in the desert. And then he met with them at Mount Sinai and told them how to live as his people. And what he does next is the climax of the whole of the book of Exodus. Most people reading through Exodus get to these chapters, and this is the point when they get bored and switch off. This is actually the climax of the whole thing. We wouldn't spend so much space on this if it weren't important. And that climax is these instructions as to how to build a tent. We get no fewer than seven chapters of detail of exactly what tent to build, what is to go in it, how it's to be entered, who can go in it. Seven chapters worth. And yet, as I say, these chapters tell us that it's possible for us to go to heaven. They're very exciting chapters. This is not the point to switch off in Exodus. This is the point to get really excited. And so what I'm going to do is give us three headings to help us look at these chapters together. Here's the first one. Heading number one, God built heaven in a tent. God built heaven in a tent. You see, this isn't just any ordinary tent, is it? Chapter 25, verse 8, "Then have them make a sanctuary for me, and I will dwell among them." This tent is what makes it possible for God to live among them. Remember, they were in the desert. They all lived in tents. It was one giant campsite. Not my idea of fun, but if you're one of the people who likes going camping, perhaps it sounds great. A huge campsite with 600,000 people camping in it. And you could wander around the campsite and you could say, that tent there, that's Rachel's. That tent there, that is Zach's. That tent there, that belongs to someone called Samuel. And that tent there in the middle, the big one, that's God's tent. God wanted to live among them, so he wanted them to build him a tent so that, like everybody else, he can have a place in the campsite that is his. It's God's tent. Very, very briefly, they made him an ark, that is a gold-covered wooden box. They made a golden table for bread to go on, and a golden lampstand. And all of those three things got put into a blue, purple, and scarlet tent that we often call the tabernacle. Outside of that tabernacle, they made two things. They made a large bronze altar for offering animals, and they made a golden altar for burning incense. And then around the whole thing was a kind of fabric enclosure to make the thing one giant courtyard containing those two altars and the tabernacle. But as I say, this isn't just any ordinary tent. This tent was God's throne room. So that ark, God says he's going to meet with them and speak to them from on top of it. And we're told that on top of the ark is a golden seat. A golden seat with two great winged creatures that the Bible calls cherubim, heavenly creatures, as the armrests. That ark with its seat on top, that's God's throne. The ark itself, that's his footrest. This is God's throne room. The dominant colors in the tent were blue, purple, scarlet, and gold. And even today, blue, purple, scarlet, and gold, those are royal colors. This is not just any tent, this is God's throne room. It's not only God's throne room, it's also a garden. It's a garden tent. Lots of the features of it were deliberately built to make it look like you were in a garden, an indoor garden. It's a bit like, I forget which garden centre it is around here. One of the garden centres. You go to them and you go into the toilets. And the lino on the floor and the decor on the wall makes it just look like you've walked into a forest enclosure. I forget which one it is. It's lovely, isn't it? Next time you're in a garden centre, go to the loo just in case that's the garden centre, okay? Because it's rather lovely. Might be cooling, I'm not sure. So it's like that in this tent. So the lampstand is a stylized almond tree in blossom and fruit. The priest's garments had pomegranates woven all the way around it so that it looked like they were a kind of walking pomegranate plant. The whole thing was designed to look like a garden. A throne room, a garden, and a meeting place. This is called, chapter 31, the tent of meeting. God doesn't want to be distant from his people. There they are in their campsite down here. There he is up there, and never the two shall meet. God wants a place where he can meet with them, where he can speak to them, where they can speak to him, where they can meet with each other. So this tabernacle tent is a throne room for God. It's a garden, and it's a meeting place between God and his people. Now, just imagine we hadn't got our Bibles open in Exodus this morning. We hadn't had any of the Bible readings that we've had. And I asked you the question. I said, which passage in the Old Testament do you turn to find God put his throne room in a garden so that he can meet with and talk with his people? Where would you go? You wouldn't go here, would you? You go to Genesis 2 and Genesis 3. You go to the Garden of Eden. Do you remember right in the very beginning, God planted a garden. He put his throne in it, and he used to meet with Adam and Eve there and speak with them. Eden was a little bit of heaven on earth. The trouble was that we sinned through our ancestors. We rebelled against God, and so we were kicked out of the garden. Kicked out, you remember, to the east of the garden. And we can't go back in. God put a cherubim with a flaming sword to stand across that entrance, flashing back and forth as a no-entry sign to make sure that nobody ever goes back into that garden again. Our sin means we are barred from the garden. Until, that is, God says to them, make me a tent to live in. A tent which is my throne room that looks like a garden where I will meet with my people. You entered that tent, by the way, from the east. And into the screen that was the doorway for that tent was woven and embroidered a cherub. Do you get it? This is Eden in that tent. Only this time the people can go in. God has put heaven on earth again, and this time the people can go into God's garden throne room, and they can meet with him again. So the desert was a place of chaos, utter chaos, dusty chaos, and a beautiful, ordered mini heaven was set up. The dimensions of this tent were absolutely precise. Almost everything was either square or on a perfect 2-to-1 rectangle. It was ordered. The desert is a functional place. It's a survival environment. You get by and nothing else. This little mini heaven was characterized by enormous beauty. People, even in that camp in Israel, as we learn in the next few chapters of Exodus, people were sinful. And yet here God has his throne and God rules. The people could enter heaven. They could experience something of the order and glory and beauty of God before they go back out into the desert to carry on with life. It's a bit like some of you know that I grew up in Kenya. And if you live in Kenya or in any foreign country, from time to time you have to go to either the High Commission or the Embassy of Great Britain. And that's a lovely place to walk into, the British High Commission. Because all of a sudden you walk into this place where they drink Earl Grey tea. You walk into this place where they have pictures of cricket and golf on the wall. You walk into this place where the architecture, the decor, the accents, the language, the everything about it just says, welcome home. Welcome to Britain. Welcome back. A little oasis of Britain in a foreign country. And in most countries of this world, there are these little mini Britons that if you belong in Britain, you can go into. And in that desert was a little oasis, a little mini heaven that you could go into. God built heaven in a tent. Secondly, God gave instructions about his tent. God gave instructions about his tent. And that's because you can't just wander in. The people couldn't just burst into God's presence as though they had every right to be there. And that is because God is holy. God is holy, which is just a word that means separate or other. God is not like us. He is different from us. He is separate from us. He is other from us. And so that's repeated all the way through. The tent was holy. Its furnishings were holy. The utensils were holy. The priestly garments were holy. The food that was used for the ordinations was holy. Everything was holy. Even the tent itself had a veil 2/3 of the way down. In the deepest third of the tent, that's where God lived in, with the ark and the seat. And so that veil separated the rest of the tent that was just holy from the innermost bit, that was not just holy, but holy, holy, most holy. God is holy. Everything about the tent was separate for him. And so you get this refrain throughout these chapters that says, you must do everything exactly according to the pattern I've shown you. They can't just make their own version of this and do it their way. It's not like an Airfix kit. Any of you remember Airfix kits? They've gone bust, haven't they? You can't get them anymore. But then you get these little things and make a little miniature plane or a ship or something. Great fun. When I was at school, I had the privilege that the RAF wanted to give me some flying lessons for nothing. So I went out and I got an Airfix kit of the little plane that the RAF were teaching me to fly in. It was called a chipmunk. And it had all this, it was amazing. Because I knew what this plane looked like, but it had little stickers that made it look just perfect. So I made it exactly according to the instructions in the packet. As perfectly as I could. I wanted this to look like a real chipmunk. But had I wanted to, I could have said, I know this is a training aircraft. I know it's supposed to be red and white, because that's the convention. But I want mine to be yellow and green, please. I could have done that. The stickers on the wing that say, do not put your foot here. I could, if I wanted, have put them underneath. Don't put your feet underneath the wing. I could do whatever I wanted with my little model aeroplane. But you can't do that with God's tent. You can't say, God says scarlet, but I think emerald would look better. You can't say, God said a bronze altar, but don't we think that brushed stainless steel would be more hygienic to use for the altar for burnt offerings? It had to be done exactly as God said, because it's his heaven, and it's his tent, and he is holy. Three times in this passage as well, there are things that are said have to be done in a very particular way so that the priest going into the tent does not die. The priest had to have bells on his garments or he would die. The priest had to have the right garments on under his robe, otherwise he would die. The priest had to wash in a particular way before going in, otherwise he would die. And it's not that those details, there's something special about them. It's just that everything had to be done exactly as God said. Otherwise, they would die. We've had this fuss in the news this week, haven't we, about Nick Griffin being banned from the Buckingham Palace garden party for using his personal invitation for political purposes. Now, I don't know what you think about Nick Griffin. I don't know what you think about the British National Party. I don't know what you think about Buckingham Palace holding tea parties for 8,000 people. Never mind. The interesting thing was listening to Nick Griffin on the radio talking about this after he'd been told he couldn't go in. And what he said is, it's the Queen's house. It's up to her who she invites in. And if she wants to make rules as to what you have to do if you're going to come, that's her choice. And he's quite right. If the Queen wants to have people into her house, that's a privilege. It's by invitation. And she can decide the terms by which that's done. If you just walk into the presence of a holy God, you die. So God gave precise instructions as to how they can build a tent, and precise instructions as to how you go in, so that you can enjoy heaven on earth and not die. And very specifically, he gave them sacrifices to deal with their sin. And provided these people followed God's instructions, all was well, and they could go to heaven on earth. God built heaven in a tent. God gave instructions about his tent. And third, God sent heaven to us in Jesus. You see, where does this leave us? We don't have their tent, do we? It's no help to us if they can go into heaven by going into this tent, because we haven't got the tent. Does it mean we're too late to have heaven on earth? No, it doesn't. That tabernacle was made out of fabric. It was replaced by a temple made out of stones. And then we get to that gospel reading we had where we hear that that temple was destroyed. But that when Jesus was raised from the dead, his body was raised to be a new temple. When Jesus lived among us, you could meet with God. When Jesus lived among us, God put his throne on the earth. If you wanted to go to heaven, you would go and find Jesus. Trouble is, it still feels like we've missed it, doesn't it? Because even Jesus isn't here any longer. He's returned to his Father. But that's okay. Don't worry. Heaven came to earth in the past, but heaven is still on earth in the present, and heaven will come to earth again in the future. 1 Peter chapter 2 says that the church, that is when Christians meet together like we're doing this morning, it's a living temple. It's not made out of fabric or stones, it's made out of people. Christians are the stones that make the temple. The temple is made out of living stones. And every time a new Christian joins the church, we had a baptism in Kensing this morning, that's a case in point. Every time a new Christian joins a church, a new stone is laid in that temple. Which means that whenever God's people gather, God is with them. We can hear God speak. In the desert there is chaos, but here things are ordered as they are in heaven. We live in a world spoilt by human sin, but this is the place where God has his throne. It's why, therefore, we aim for worship that is beautiful. The flowers look good this morning, for example. It's why we aim for worship that is ordered, and it's why we aim for worship that is centered around hearing God's voice, which is what we're doing now. So it may not feel like it, but that's what we do when we gather here. We enter heaven on earth. Amidst the chaos of life, we, the people of God, can enter the presence of God. We can experience something of the order and beauty and glory of God before we go back out into the desert and live for God for the rest of the week. But to do so, we must do things exactly as God says. And in particular, our sin has to be dealt with, because God is holy. We must come together in the presence of God on the basis of Jesus' sacrifice for sin and not try to come to God in any other way. God put heaven on earth in the past. Heaven is still on earth now. And here's the best bit. One day Jesus will come back. Then there will be no need for a temple because God will live amongst us. Then you won't just have heaven in miniature on earth. You won't just have the heaven high commission. Heaven itself will be here. Then you can know the order and glory and beauty of God. And the best bit is this. You don't have to leave and go back out into the desert. You can stay. So do you ever wish you were in heaven? Life is tough, and I'd be surprised if you never wish you could just go to heaven for an hour or two. Well, God put heaven on earth. He did it in a tent. He did it in Jesus. He does it in his church. And he will do it when Jesus comes back. And by gathering together around God's throne each week like this, we get to enter heaven for an hour and a quarter. And what that does is gives us the strength to live as God's people for the rest of the week.